You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good,
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Banshee After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Banshee After Show.
Hey there, Fanshees. Do we have, yeah, we have theme music. There it is. Hey, it's AfterBuzz TV, Banshee After Show. You know where you are. Why else would you be listening or watching this podcast? That would be crazy. We're talking about Season 2, Episode 6, Armies of One. I am Matt Lieberman, of course. And joining me, my fantastic panel, Oriana Leo's here.
Hi, everybody.
Manus Rose is back.
Hey, what's going on?
Roya Tahiri on the ones and twos.
Hello.
Yes. So, guys, fantastic episode.
Armies of One says it all.
Well, here's the thing, right? So I was lucky enough to get screeners at the top of the season, mm-hmm. and I had episodes 1 through 5, and I watched them all, like, you know, what feels like a lifetime ago.
Well, so, you had already binge-watched season one.
Yeah.
So you were on a roll. You had momentum.
Just going.
Yeah.
And this is the first new episode that I've seen in a while. It's the first one I've watched live as it aired. And we're very definitely in the back half of the season. Things are tightening up. Everything's going in a direction I didn't quite suspect, which is also very, very exciting.
Totally
what do you guys
think? Opposite from last week's episode.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, we had that very intimate, you know, Hood and Carrie story, and now we're back in the thick of it.
Blood and boobies.
Blood, boobies. We had a decapitation.
Woohoo!
We had two decapitations. One via truck, other by garrote wire. Yeah, a lot of heads flying, a lot of boobies. Let's just
there
jump right into it.
There's actually quite a lot of boobies now that I think of it.
Well, first of all,
I'm not complaining.
We have our opening sequence where Quentin, our Jason Statham lookalike, in his very fancy suit and with his Jaguar, beating down on some hillbillies who just can't leave his car alone.
Hey, 00 homo.
Yeah, I mean, when you see a brand new Jaguar, you start jumping on it and breaking off mirrors.
That's what I do every time.
Yes,
I'm honest.
Exactly. That's what you have to do. I mean, I'm from Phoenix, and all of us.
That's what you do in Phoenix.
Exactly. That's how we roll.
You're dangerous. Yeah, I can tell it by your. What is this? Is this a vest or what is this jacket?
I don't know. It's
you
some
guys
kind
are
of
both wearing.
Yeah, the vest.
I know.
Vest. I
it's,
know.
It's the new thing, Oriana. You
didn't
gotta
get the memo.
I didn't get the memo on the most useless piece of clothing.
Yes. It is the world's most useless piece of clothing. So Quentin comes to town. He's looking for Jason Hood. As we all assumed.
We kind of thought that might happen.
Yeah, we all thought that Jason was kind of doomed.
Yeah.
And we all assumed it was gonna be from this outside force.
From his own stupidity, even.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
he made it really hard to like.
I know.
Like him.
Every dang time. Just stay in the room. They're not killing you. They're trying to save your life. They give you all the IDs. He was so happy when he got his new IDs and his credit card and his bank statements and everything.
You can't fix stupid.
No, you can't.
No matter what Sheriff Hood tries to do, he's actually trying to help. He's not thinking of himself.
For once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And no matter what, this guy, you can't save Jason from himself.
Yeah.
He's so stupid.
Well, I really loved the parallels in this scene where Quentin shows up at Sugar's bar for the first time. And we're seeing this kind of cross-cutting between this scene and the scene in the pilot where the real Sheriff Hood is killed. And I just wanted to hear what you guys thought about that. I kind of took it almost as, like, you know, not just showing the parallels to the audience, but Sheriff Hood maybe even feeling a little bit of guilt for how things went down that day.
That's exactly what I thought because, you know, he was now in the position of, you know, being the Sheriff Hood, if you will, the original Sheriff Hood. You know, bad guys are walking in, something goes down. He's responsible for what happens now.
Mm-hmm.
That day, he wasn't sheriff. You know, he may not have been responsible at the very moment, but now it's his turn to make sure this goes right.
Yes.
This time. Yeah. He can't repeat the past.
Well, it's why I think he hasn't killed Jason and is trying to get him out, you know.
Right.
On some level, he's trying to set that right.
What about you, Manas?
Well, you know, the theme I feel of this whole episode is what Siobhan later says about how you cannot change, you can only evolve. And I feel, you know, Sheriff is trying to change. He's doing whatever, and he's, you know, those almost change and evolution, almost the same thing, but they're actually different. You know, one is growth, one is just completely changing. He feels he could just change, and I don't think he can. Evolution
is more, you know, it's forced by the environment. It's adaptation to your environment, to your surroundings, and to your living situation versus just changing outright is kind of arbitrary. You can make a decision to change, but your nature will not.
Right.
And I absolutely agree. I think it is a sign of his evolution that he has this level of mercy for someone who, quite frankly, he has a lot of disdain for and poses a serious problem. He could have easily just dispatched him and buried the body, but this is not the Lucas Hood, quote unquote, that we met in the pilot.
And I think knowing that he's a father, because he's really not being a father, but knowing that he's a father and developing that kind of that attachment to Deva at a distance is changing him and making him more sensitive. Even, you know, even though it is slowly, that's evolution because it's been very slow.
Absolutely.
And he's adjusting and adapting to this new reality of his. And I think that rubbed off on the situation. Here's a young kid who made a mistake.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he couldn't stop making mistakes.
Yeah. No, I love your point, and it stuck out the most to me when Quentin's talking to him about, you know, outside of the caddy, and he's talking about how, you know, he'd have to take away his son. And it's a little brief moment where Sheriff Hood's like, well, he's not my son, but it made him start thinking about his daughter. If that was his daughter, what would he do?
Right.
She's a screw-up, too,
right,
as we see in this episode, and we'll talk more about that later on. But I really, really enjoyed watching these two size each other up. The title of the episode, obviously, Armies of One, and Sheriff Hood has always been one, and it's the first time. Well, no, not the first time. He's met a few. The albino was one. Chaitin was one. Mm-hmm. But now we have another one that matches his level of intelligence.
He also matches his size.
Yeah.
Yes. Instead of having a giant, it was really like a true duel.
Okay. So then maybe he's the first true army of one versus pure giant.
Right.
No giants this week.
Right.
We're really bummed about that.
You know, the fight scenes weren't as long as we saw with the albino or Chaitin, but it was still just as effective. Mm-hmm. I mean, the power, you know, Sheriff still got, I mean, he got thrown around still, you know, quite a few times as well.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to make a quick comment about our opening scene.
Let's do it.
Where Lucas has all these kind of quotes going around in his head about what Job has said about everyone near you gets hurt. And it really seems like he's struggling with a lot of these messages.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you guys took that. Like, I was trying to figure out, is he being kind of tortured and taunted by the stuff in his information, in his mind? Is it floating around? Is he sort of in a dream state?
Well, you have to remember, last week he had convinced himself that not only should he leave, but that he could leave.
Right.
And then was presented with the evidence that he really can't. So I think it's a sign of his inner conflict.
Right.
He's somebody who understands that the people around him get hurt whenever he's around. You know, he's lost too many people. He's made too many mistakes. But at the same time, leaving in some ways can cause just as much damage. So,
and that, I think, is part of his evolution right
there. I think so, too.
An evolution in thinking.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to mention was that I noticed, I loved the cinematography on the dogs in that very first scene in the back of the truck with the hillbillies.
Yeah.
And I noticed the butterfly that was flying by because I just thought it was such an interesting contrast to have these vicious dogs and a slow floating butterfly. And we weren't able to see the final scene,
but according to Manas, there were butterflies.
There was this incredibly awesome butterfly flying through the meadows, showed Quentin's head.
Sweet.
So yes.
I would have commented that I would love that you could pick up on something so small in the beginning that would essentially wrap it up at the end.
Well, I mean, as Greg Yatena said last week on the podcast, you know, the whole concept behind the show is to provide as deep an experience for viewers as possible. And having these sorts of visual flourishes, having things like the numerology, It's all to deepen the fan experience and allow them to hunt for these connections, which are often very beautiful.
And I have to tell you guys, have you been to Banshee Origins online? Mm-hmm. Welcome to Banshee. Have you done it?
No.
So I played.
It's a blast.
It is really cool. It's like an interactive kind of game. So after you watch the episode, I did last week's episode, and it really made me hone in on certain things on this episode. I don't think I would have noticed the butterfly. I wasn't looking for numbers this time. There was too much going on in the episode.
Sure.
But it will reveal to you where the numbers and the numerology on the dial and the in the title sequence, mm-hmm. They reveal where they it. The video shows where they will be revealed.
Right. So it shows corresponding scenes from the episode, and you have to try to spot it and figure out what number was just in the scene that you just saw in order to unlock the next scene
and what the significance is. And there's other origin stories too, which I just think are amazing to be able to learn just a little bit more about your about the characters.
Right. Well, it's kind of like, you know, in a pulp graphic novel, eventually you start giving you have an issue where you get the secret origins of somebody.
Yes.
And it's really cool that they're giving us that experience, even though it's not, you know, on the channel, it's not on Cinemax. It's for the people who want it, and I think it's a sign of the level of respect that the creative team has for their fan base, which is really gratifying.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay, want to talk really quickly about iTunes. You knew I had to do it. It was going to happen within the 10 to 15 minute range. That's when it comes. And then we'll continue talking about this great episode. So, folks, thank you so much for hitting us up on the iTunes, on the YouTube, on the Twitter. You guys are the best fans in the world, frankly. And we need your support. This podcast doesn't happen without you. You download it. You stream it on any one of your devices because we live in the most amazing future ever devised. And, you know, we do it for you because you love the show as much as we do. How can you help us? Well, I'll tell you. It's not that hard. It just takes a moment. Go to iTunes, slap the show with a rating, give it a review. It only takes a moment, and it means the world to us. It's the only feedback that we get, and we like feedback. We like knowing that we're doing a decent job. You're enjoying the product. Are we wasting our time? Should I just go home? Should we pack it in?
No, never.
Should I just gain a bunch of weight?
No.
You know, and then just start marketing myself as some sort of somersaulting, large, fat, round man?
No, Matt, I will not let you.
Monis, it's not up to you. It's up to the fan base.
So Do it.
No, Roya, no. You don't want me to. You want me to host the pot. Anyway. My point is, go to iTunes. It just takes a second. It means the world. It keeps the show searchable. I'm trying to pull up reviews.
And
right
if you're
now.
Not if you're not on iTunes and you're watching us on YouTube, we appreciate a thumbs up, a subscribe, and a comment if you like.
Yeah, or even if you don't have access to either of these and you're listening to this on Stitcher, you can email info@afterbuzztv.com and just send a nice email. Let our bosses know that we're fighting the good fight and giving you the good stuff. I can't find these reviews right now.
That's okay.
I'll send out some tweets thanking some people. But anyway, back to the show because we only have a limited amount of time. So I really enjoyed the fight scene between Quentin and Sheriff Hood. Obviously, before that, we have the good sheriff trying to avoid bloodshed. You know, he's realizing that, you know, when these two forces collide, when the unstoppable force meets the immovable object, mm-hmm. something breaks. So he doesn't want to kill or to be killed. Unfortunately, doesn't work out. Dude just can't
but
resist.
I mean, what I found it odd that he would give away that much money and think that another criminal is going to do what he says he's going to do. I mean, why would you trust somebody like that?
Well, I mean, as Quentin said, and back me up here, Monis, Quentin was like, you know, if you really did trust me to do that, why did you follow me and meet me out here
but
with your guns?
But he did, and then he realized when Sugar said something specific about how he was outsmarted by a bunch of rodents, then it clicks in his mind that he maybe had made a poor decision.
What do you think, Monis?
But he gets his money back, we are assuming, because he kills the guy.
Oh, he gets all the money back.
But, I mean, in the first place, I can't believe he would do that.
I mean, Sheriff always is a thief, you know? Once a thief, always a thief. He knows all the time, I feel, in the back of his mind, he's going to be double-crossed. I feel he's always thinking he's going to be double-crossed. Even when he's with a woman, he's thinking he's going to be double-crossed, no matter what.
Yeah.
That's just his mindset. So, you know.
Here's what I took from it, and you guys tell me what you think. I think part of his evolution is the development in some corner of his brain of hope. Hope, not just in the world, but also in people. and the hope that he doesn't have to be the same person that he's been for a very long time.
I totally agree. I just think that was a poor choice.
Well, no, but that's my point. He wasn't thinking clearly. He hoped against hope that, you know, if he gave this guy this money, that it would work out and that things could progress. I think he knew in the back of his head it wasn't going to work out.
Right.
But he still had to try.
Right.
You know, it would have been a pleasant surprise to see Quentin drive away to Brantley without this money. Which brings us to, you know, if Quentin's dead and he never returns...
Is Brantley going to come looking for Sheriff Hood?
Right.
Yeah. Or looking for somebody, looking for Jason. Jason never left, so he's never going to find Jason again. So I think that that means we've got a new player in sort of the larger world of this show. Another crime boss who might be... heading to Banshee.
And as Brock says, why is it that every scumbag with an automatic weapon comes here to the Sugar Shack to shoot you, Sheriff Hood? And so, you know, there's that little storyline as well that is getting suspicious.
Yeah.
And what freeway out there only has semi-trucks driving?
I don't know.
Only semi-trucks.
Well, and it's a truck route.
Yeah. All right.
It's a truck route, but then how does Sheriff Hood know that he's going to take his Jaguar on the truck route? Because it seems like you only take the truck route if you're trying to avoid capture.
There's only one way out of Banshee.
I guess, in a pine box. Right? Because everyone dies.
Yeah.
It's funny. Okay. anything else on this story before we move on?
Well, I was just thinking about the whole Brock situation. Like,
let's talk about Brock.
We were talking about it in the screening. I wasn't quite clear on, you know, Brock is snooping. Sugar sees it. He finds Jason's license as well as a picture of Gordon and Carrie Hopewell's family. But then he goes to Gordon and says, you told me. And so I'm kind of wondering, how much has Brock taken this on his own because he's pissed that he's not the boss?
Right.
And how much is it that Gordon has sent him on this errand on purpose?
It wasn't really that he sent him on an errand. Brock's natural suspicion and curiosity is, I think, what fueled this move. But back in the first episode of the season, they kind of have this brief tete-a-tete in front of the courthouse where, you know, Gordon's like, look, you obviously are like me and realize that something's going on here. So whatever you find, you tell me. Whatever I find, I'll tell you. So I think
Brock maybe just needed sort of kind of some permission.
Yeah.
For him to sort of act on his suspicions.
Exactly. Knowing that he has somebody else who feels the same way, who is also in a position of power and is tied into this situation, I think has freed him up to take action versus just quietly muttering to himself, something's wrong.
So here we have another angle at which, you know, Lucas Hood's credibility will be undermined.
Right. Well, this fake driver's license is the smoking gun just as much as the picture of the family, because once they figure out who this kid is and that he's been murdered...
Or he's disappeared.
He's disappeared.
Because Kai is probably... And Burton are not going to let that be found.
Well, but this watch is there. This watch that has his DNA on it because he was wearing it.
His dad's.
Yeah, his dad's watch. And exactly, if the cops find this watch before Lucas does, what does that mean once they get the DNA for Lucas Hood on it? Why is the sheriff's watch there? And wait a minute, that's not your DNA, because we tested your DNA. But that also comes up as Lucas Hood. What's happening here?
Uh-oh.
It's all kinds of threads are going to start getting pulled, and it's all going to come undone, unless Brock Lotus meets an untimely end.
Ooh. Dun, dun, dun. Oh, but did you know,
there.
Just to make Brock likable, he was wearing his Philly Eagles
hat.
Saw that. I mean, you know, not too many characters wear clothes with logos, but he, you know, he shined his Philadelphia Eagles pride right there. I'm just saying, you know, so he's likable. He's a local guy.
I'm not saying he's not likable. I was proud of him for snooping this week. I'm like, go Brock. Follow the suspicions, because you're right. And what I want more cops like you who are going to protect me from people who steal people's identities and then go around fighting and killing and banging people. This is the kind of cop that I want. But still, I have to imagine once word gets to Lucas, because he and Sugar didn't have the conversation yet,
right,
that he's been snooping and he realizes what he probably knows and what's missing from the floor under his bed, creepy. It's going to be a big problem. It's going to be a big, big problem. All right. I want to talk about Jason, who is R.I.P., but not really, because he's kind of a jerk. and Rebecca.
Oh my gosh.
He makes the worst mistake in the world. Let's talk about Rebecca first, and we'll circle back to Jason. So Rebecca is still learning at the hands of her Uncle Kai, her dear, sweet Uncle Kai. He has finally kind of reached a sort of truce with Alex Longshadow. Mm-hmm. He'll take care of his enemies in order to keep him in power. And
Alex
then he gets,
doesn't like it, though.
Yeah, he's not crazy about it, but he'll do whatever he has to do to stay in power.
Right.
Yeah. And Kai kind of breaks down to Rebecca what this casino means to him. It's a legacy for him to leave behind that is somewhat legitimate. And since he has no children, weird pause.
Uh-huh.
And then he changes the subject, kind of. This relationship is so weird.
Oh my god, the fact that he's getting a BJ from one of his employees. Mm-hmm.
And it's also the only way that she's going to get her money.
It's the only way she can get her money. In addition, it's following the pattern of him liking the darker skinned ladies.
Yes.
And this is also the second time that Rebecca has walked in, caught him doing essentially a similar act.
A sexual act.
And this
act,
time,
yeah.
Locks
eyes with him, and he does nothing about it. He doesn't he doesn't stop her. He doesn't look down. He's just kind of like,
how does that make you feel?
Yeah.
So
very uncomfortable.
Is Kai visualizing the woman doing the deed, or is he visualizing?
Oh, wait, he's looking at Rebecca.
Obviously, is he getting? But I'm saying, who is he getting off at?
We don't know.
Well, I feel like. I don't understand what drives Kai Proctor sexually. I mean, the bonnet to me reeks of shame,
yes.
self-hatred. But you know, having the all of his employees blow him or have sex with him to me reeks of a power thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's showing that he is in power, and I think that's also what he's doing with Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
Is showing her how much power he has by not caring that she can see. Yeah, it's like, that's right. I keep talking about the power that I have. You've been conflicted in the past about whether or not you're with me. This is me.
So what I am curious to find out from the scene is when he says, you know, you're either with me or you're not with me. After Burton comes in and
cold-bloodedly murders him.
Yeah.
Myrtle. Myrtles him.
So, I mean, what exactly is he saying? Is he saying that we're going to have an exclusive sexual relationship? Is he saying, I own you and you can only do what I say? I mean, I'm curious as to how this is going to play
out.
But he just terrorized her to the point that she probably is going to do whatever he says because...
I don't know. That freak out in the car reeks to me of a woman who realizes she's trapped.
Yes.
And is intensely frustrated. In the sexual way.
Where is she going to go?
I don't know. Manas has something to say.
I mean, so I did a lot of research on the Amish community over my time away.
Get it, girl? Look
yes,
at you.
Yes, exactly. And I don't know if you guys discussed this in season one, but I feel, you know, Rebecca's still, you know, having a free-for-all with her Rumspringer. Have you guys talked about the Rumspringer?
We haven't talked about Rumspringer yet.
All right, but anyway, I mean, they're just learning, and I feel, you know, even Kai, you know, with the Rumspringer, she is learning the new ways, and maybe Kai is, teaching.
Hold on. This isn't her Rumspringer.
Rumspringer is when you're allowed to go off and see the world. She has been banned from her family.
Yeah.
You're right. I was kind of stretching, though, in the Banshee world that this was, you know, I was trying
They don't seem to be allowing that sort of freedom in this community at all, because no one's allowed to have any freedom whatsoever.
Well, I'm pretty sure. The question is, we don't know how old Rebecca is and whether or not
someone tweeted at me that she was in her early 20s.
Early 20s. Okay. So I have to imagine that she's old enough to have gone on Rumspringer, went back to the community, but couldn't shake the new things that she discovered.
If that's something that they support, because I don't know.
I don't know if every community does Rumspringer.
Sorry, I just had to mention it because I was really into this. I heard this term for the first time.
Well, why don't you tell our fans what it is?
Well, basically, I mean, it's between the for an Amish boy or girl between the ages of 16 and 18, they're allowed, and different Amish communities have different rules, obviously, but basically, in a nutshell, they're allowed to venture into the real world. They're allowed to drive a car with wheels. They're allowed to, you know, do just regular things, go to the movies, and if they want to do some, you know, vices in life, they're allowed to do that as well.
The problem, of course, is that if they decide they want to leave, then they are banned from their family.
Right.
No matter what. So
right.
The decision, it's really not much of a...
It's not a great choice.
It's not a great choice to make.
It's pretty hard. And so, it seems like, to me, that's kind of what happened with her, where she felt the pull of the outside world mm-hmm. but didn't want to be without her family, but then also couldn't shake some of the things she had discovered. Here's what's most interesting for me, though, is what she takes from seeing Kai with this stripper mm-hmm. and the power of that. And there's something in the look that's almost like, can you handle this? And this is this moment with Jason is her trying to show that she can.
And she's trying to show her power.
Yeah.
Right? She's not letting her touch him.
You know, she's dominating. She's in control. You know, she's not saying a word. She's not letting him
say
anything.
And is she learning this from Kai? Is this a paint by colors? Are we going to get like...
Absolutely.
Paint by numbers, I mean?
I mean, I kind of see him grooming her to take over the casino and all of his businesses when he dies. You know, and that's part of the reason why her loyalty is so important to him. You know, this is his life's work.
Even sexual loyalty.
But at the same time, I don't think that that's necessarily Kai saying, we're going to bang.
Right.
I think it's,
be careful.
Is you belong to no other man but me.
Right.
You know, like, I imagine at some point, if they're not entering into some kind of creepy sexual relationship, at the very least, she can only, like, sleep with men that he's approved, or, like, he brings men for her the same way that he brings women for her.
Sure.
You know, he has to be in charge of it and maybe even watching from a closet, you know? Like, but that's what I'm saying is sexually he seems to be driven by this sort of pattern of power and shame mm-hmm. where when he's having these women put on this bonnet, he's having aggressive sex with the family that spurned him, which also may drive the attraction to the niece.
Ay, ay, ay.
It's a very deep, murky morass.
Hey, you know, Kai is an equal opportunist, all right? I'm just saying.
What does that mean? Is he
I don't know. It's a very, men? It's just a very, I was trying to get into more of his character. You mentioned he does, you know, different women. He just doesn't do one race, and he's not in, probably he wants, I mean, if he wants to go within his family, you know, that's the type of guy he is. He's an equal opportunist, is all.
Okay, all right.
Character development,
Development, evolution, not change.
Yes.
Okay. So we also get to see just a brief little peek behind the veneer of Mr. Burton and perhaps his relationship with Kai.
Oh, my gosh.
So after he completely... it's like it's garrote wire or garroting wire, and he just garrots Jason. He comes back to clean the room. He's listening to classical music.
Opera.
Yes. And he's like smelling things. He's like smelling the sex sheets. And like.
He's working out.
He seems like he had. It was a. There were a series of things he was doing
was
almost
a
as a
ritual.
Yeah. This is a ritual he has performed before.
The same way that I think the beating that he receives is also part of the ritual. Now, we don't see if it comes from Kai, but here's the scenario that it led me to believe that it was. Burton should have stopped her before this sex happened. He was punished for letting it happen and then had to go clean it up and, like, clean away his mess, basically. That's, to me, what that whole sequence was about. But the most, like, jarring thing and weird thing to me is the moment in the mirror when he smiles at himself and then it drops off his face. He's, like, testing it out to see almost what it would
look like.
Because he never has or, like, hasn't in a long time. And I'm so curious about what has warped this dude's mind.
And it's such a bizarre smile, and his reaction to it is so bizarre.
Yeah.
But I imagine that it's Kai, or it's a Kai proxy that is doling out this punishment.
A proctor proxy,
because it is an extension of what's happening with Rebecca. It's the show of power. Mm-hmm. It's the really, really deciding that everyone in your life is going to serve you. You're going to dominate them. You're going to have the power on them.
Yeah.
But in exchange for their loyalty, they will be rewarded. And I don't know how, financially or with comfort.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Live
in his nice house and be treated with respect and whatever.
You know, get men picked out for you or ladies or whatever you want.
Right. And so maybe this is what poor Rebecca has in store for her. I don't know. Some kind of punishment and reward system.
I imagine that's definitely in the cards, and this is Banshee.
One thing I have to say, isn't it a little far-fetched after what an amazing job that Burton does scrubbing the carpet clean and all this.
That he misses the
watch. That he misses a watch of that size and bulk.
I don't know. I mean, granted, coincidences should never make things easier for your characters.
Right.
And this watch being left behind makes things worse for everybody.
Right.
Well, I love the fact, and you brought this out, you know, with all the Easter eggs, that no character in Banshee goes without a little more backstory, you know. I thought, you know, from the get-go that Clay was going to be just a very, very minor character. We just saw him without any lines, and now we're getting this backstory. We're getting some exposition, and I feel we receive exposition with all of the characters.
Who's
Clay?
Burton. Clay Burton.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is his first name.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Sorry. All right.
No, I mean, it's just when you have a quiet dude in a bow tie who goes into that in the third episode of the first season, goes into that RV and just kills that dude off camera and then just comes right back out. He's very compelling. He's just a very compelling person. I want to know everything that I can know, and I want to see his army of one come up against Sheriff Hood's army of one because they have very, very different styles.
Right.
You know, Burton is sneakier. He's more of like, he's more of a snake.
He's stealthy.
Yeah, he's more of a snake versus Sheriff Hood, who's got more of like a bear or like just like a cheetah, jaguar, panther, puma, leopard, tiger. What are other big cats? Okay. All right, so speaking of Sheriff Hood, he's wrestling with all this, but he also finds some time to stop off and make a little pit stop with Miss Siobhan Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the juxtaposition of their sex versus Jason and Rebecca's sex, and how they feel and what they mean and the way that they're shot, how they're lit. It all goes to show how diametrically opposed these two scenes are. Because with Jason and Rebecca, it's about power. It's about disassociation. Mm-hmm. She's not looking at him. He's just kind of pounding away with this gross gopher face.
Ew.
And
that's all I could think, too, is ew, ew, ew. It's mm-hmm. really all I could think.
Yeah, you know, that's not satisfying. Mm-hmm. I don't
this
know why she
There's nothing sexy about that, about any of their sex
right.
scenes. Yeah.
And if he had just stayed in the room, he'd be alive.
I know, stupid.
Idiot. Anyway. versus this kind of tender, passionate, connected lovemaking
mm-hmm.
that the sheriff and Siobhan have. And, like, while I'm bummed that he just leaves her there naked on the bed, first of all, if she's sprawled out over the center, that's just a very selfish way of passing out. Because, what, I have to wake you up to move you over? Is
maybe
a whole thing.
He just did a really good job.
I mean, we have to assume that he did. It's Sheriff Hood.
Yeah.
He doesn't leave a job undone.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. But he leaves her, and I'm pissed at him for it, but at the same time, I think it bothers him on some level.
That he's doing it.
Yeah, that he's doing it, and that it is as connected, which just shows like how pure her intentions are.
Right.
And that he does have an attraction to her, that he does have an attachment to her. He knows that he can't let her in, but what if he did? And it's still early days, and
part
maybe
of his
I'm
evolution.
Like,
I don't
right.
think so. I don't think you're overreaching at all.
Okay.
I think there's a real tenderness between them. I think he's trying to keep his boundaries.
Yeah.
But we see him struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And she's doing her best, I think, to keep them as well, or at least respect his.
Right.
But I mean, we're watching on his face that it's not an easy decision.
Yeah. And, you know, she's seen a lot of the worst of him. She doesn't know that he's a criminal, but she does know that he can kill, that he does fight, that he is rough around the edges, that there's more to him than he has actually explained. But she still has these very warm feeling towards him anyway. And I just love this shot from above. You know, and he's basically he's taken up the whole frame, but you know, her legs are coming around the side, and then you just see it's just her face, and I love this because it's very rare that I feel like I'm seeing an honest sex scene from a woman's perspective.
I totally agree. What about you?
Yes,
on television,
I actually felt the same mm-hmm. way.
Yeah, and I felt like we were seeing both scenes from the woman's perspective. Rebecca dissociating, just trying to get an ounce of pleasure where she has so much confusion and pain, versus Siobhan, who's feeling connected with a partner, who's feeling fulfilled with a partner, who's ending a long day. You know, I love seeing that kind of emotion, especially on an action show where you imagine that a lot of the sex is going to be very aggressive, or, you know, like damaged people just trying to escape for a moment or whatever.
Hats off to you, because I think that's an amazing just judgment about what you saw.
Fantastic.
Especially from
I feel so weird when I get compliments.
But
on
I'm a woman. I saw that and I didn't think to bring it up because I thought, this isn't really the audience.
No, it's we love the show. We are the audience.
But I mean, to hear it from you means that much more.
Cool.
So thanks.
Thank you. Yeah.
Sweet. Well, I like seeing them together. I like their chemistry. I like what it means.
I don't want her to get hurt.
I know.
But I feel, you know, going back one more time, but from her little, you know, soliloquy about evolution and change.
Yeah.
I feel she accepts the sheriff. He's not going to change.
She said she was counting on it.
Yeah.
Well, growth. I think she was counting on growth.
On evolution.
On evolution.
Yeah, on evolution. But I don't think he's going to change. I feel
like he is going to evolve, though. We've been seeing it. And I think it's not lost on her. We have to remember that this is all very compressed time.
Right?
The sheriffhood that she met month or two ago, however long he's actually been there, they're radically different on some levels from the person that she's sleeping with now and she's beginning this ill-advised relationship with. And I think she understands that he has a depth of feeling. One of the favorite things that Greg talked about when he was here was the reconception of the character after they shot episode 4 of last season as the first episode, when Anthony Starr has this big animalistic reaction to being trapped in the opening of that episode and realizing that he does have pain and that he does have emotion. He has this deep well of feeling. I think it's not lost on Siobhan. I think it's one of the reasons that she's so attracted to him.
And I think that also brings up the idea of change versus evolution. If you look up close, it looks like he's evolving. But like you said, if season 1 and 2 are like 2 or 3 months time, that's a lot of change. Mm-hmm. That's like radical change.
Oh, yeah.
So it could be essentially both. People really do change. Yeah. I don't know. That's going to be the question of the season or of the whole series. Who knows?
I will say I'm rooting for both of them. I really am. I'm on their side.
I love these crazy kids. Let's make that happen. All right. So on the other side of the coin, though, we have the former lover, Carrie, and her offspring, Deva, Max. We got Gordon in the mix. After Carrie left that light-up unicorn in Deva's room last episode, sweet, also creepy, Deva, obviously not happy. She's doing this doing driver's ed, and these B-words
mean
in the
girls.
Back seat. I don't like that word. I don't use it. But these girls, I'm sorry. She's right there.
Okay, well, that's happening.
And the instructor's not stopping it.
By the way, that kind of stuff happens all the time, like in high school.
Awful.
Girls will bully other girls by getting really close to them and then saying horrible, horrible things to each other so that you know that the other girl is the victim. She's going to hear it.
It's insanity
bullying.
What happens.
It's awful. But it can be real accepted and ignored by teachers. So I kind of like that they showed that as the catalyst for a catastrophic event, because bullying really can lead to some serious things.
Totally. And she starts driving the car like a crazy woman. She pulls over into the wrong side of the road, nearly causes an accident. And, Gordon shows up. He defends her. He threatens this dude in a big way. He's like, I will feed you your effing lungs.
I know. Where did that come from?
Okay, Gordon,
did
get
you get that
girl.
From the strip club or what?
I don't know. But he's got a lot of aggression. And I've always felt like Gordon, there's more story there than we've seen.
Way more.
Because there's a darkness in him. And we'll get to explore it, I assume, as we move forward. But, you know, Dave is obviously rattled. And she has no one really to talk to. She's been pushing her mother away. Until Gordon gets way too hopped up on the goof juice and the pills and the marijuana and the strippers, and he comes home nearly blackout drunk, and she has to carry him up the stairs and try to, you know, explain it away to Max. It's not quite working.
Mm-mm.
And she's realizing, you know, that her father's not a paragon of virtue either.
Right.
She only has two parents. She should at least hear her mother's side and get her questions answered, even if she can't let her back into her life right now. So I was really happy that she opened that door back up at the end of the episode. And obviously Carrie was very, very happy about that.
I was really touched by that scene at the top of the stairs with Gordon, just mm-hmm. because as an adult that without children, I don't, you know, if I know someone that's blackout drunk, I'm like, wow, you're kind of pathetic and you need to think about what you did. And in the morning, you're going to feel like crap. And I hope you feel sorry. You know, yeah, I'm not going to feel sorry for you. That was a choice you made. But as a parent, the consequences are so much greater and children don't understand. And to see their like fear and, you know, terror mm-hmm, mm-hmm. was really touching because it has such a far reaching effect.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I was just, you pointed it out. Absolutely. That image is going to stay with them. I mean,
forever.
Oh, yeah. Even no matter what good they do, you know, in future, still that image. Oh, this is my dad.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah.
So that really makes that indelible print on them, and it's enough to push Deva over to her mom to at least carry her out.
Yeah. And, you know, she and Max get to reunite for a little bit in this episode. Very, very sweet moment. Mm-hmm. Watching them doing the skateboard tricks. That's great. I'm worried about what Gordon is going to do over these next few episodes. He's definitely self-destructing.
He's very unstable.
Yeah.
Especially with him getting information about Sheriff Hood, you know, mm-hmm. finding out that Dave is being, you know, spending time with Carrie.
Yeah. It's not going to end well for them. Okay. Just Sugar and Job. Job comes back.
Purple hair.
Yeah, purple mm-hmm. hair. And like a wonderful, like, Marie Claire cardigan or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and
always changing it up.
Mm-hmm. Coming back from New York. So how was selling the diamonds?
Oh, my gosh.
Holy effing C, guys.
You just did 15 years for a handful of glass.
Boom.
Boom. Oh, my God. Oh, my brain exploded.
I know.
How did anyone? Fans, tell us what you thought, because it was like,
the look on his face when he realized what happened.
And okay.
The heartbreak, the shame, the almost fear. Like,
okay, this is where my mind is already going.
Yeah.
Because I can't stand that this is an actual possibility.
Yeah.
That this happened.
Yeah.
Is it possible that Rabbit knew where the location was and he stole them back and switched them out and is going to mess with Lucas Hood's head to make him think that it was all for naught? Because I can't really deal with this, that he fought the albino for nothing.
I want to be there for you, Oriana. I can't agree.
I'm going to hold out hope, okay? Just like Lucas
hope.
Is evolving and he's hoping that some ridiculous plan will work. I'm also going to hope that some ridiculous solution will come and he will get his diamonds.
Or is this the catalyst and he just says, F it all, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, go after Rabbit.
Yes, really.
That would be rad. I'm down for that.
I mean, right when he's accepting Banshee, right when it's like, oh, this is my new life, ha ha ha, I'm going to get my daughter that I never knew I had, ha ha ha, and then boom.
Why is he laughing?
I don't know. Okay.
Trying to make a G-rated Banshee world, I guess. I don't know.
Impossible.
Impossible.
Yeah. Okay, time for predictions.
Yeah.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
All right, folks. So we got a dead Jason Hood on our hands and an incriminating watch found on the premises.
We have to say that we didn't see the preview.
Yeah, we didn't see the preview for next week, so we don't know anything that's coming. But we do know that Sheriff Hood is supposed to pick up Jason the following day, and he's going to come back to this completely cleaned out apartment, except for the watch, and he's not going to be thrilled.
Let's hope he finds the watch.
Yes, let's hope he finds it first. I think it's gonna reignite the Kai Hood feud, which has been dormant for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna see some murders or some pressurings on the part of Kai Proctor for Alex Longshadow's
council members.
Council next week, all that's happening. And Rebecca's dealing with some serious stuff. What do you guys think?
Honest.
I feel, first of all, that Sugar is going to be pouring a few more of those last call cocktails, and he's going to be making them like a quadruple for everybody.
Nice.
And also, I feel actually next week, Job, Sugar, and the Sheriff, the gang's going to get back together because they want to solve this diamond thing. I think that's going to be the big A story. I think all the other stuff, it will be pushed under the rug. That and Rabbit, obviously. We're going to see some Rabbit. Or we're going to see something with that.
Yeah.
But it's all about the diamonds. It's about the three of them. I feel we're going to see a lot more Joe. We're going to see a lot more Sugar. We're going to see a lot more Sheriff.
All right. Sweet. Oriana?
Just to piggyback off you guys, I'm really – I guess it's not – as much of a prediction as a question, but more, will the sheriff unravel because of this news? Will he devolve because this has kind of shaken his core foundation of what he thought was real for so long? Or will he somehow keep it together to lead these three? I'm very curious. I'm going to hope that he'll rally the troops with one focused goal of eviscerating Rabbit.
I think it's definitely going to it's going to be a huge distraction.
Sure.
He's definitely going to have to grapple with some demons.
And what I predict is that it will be such a distraction he will not notice the other little things going on in Banshee that are essentially kind of pulling at the threads of his identity.
I love that prediction. That I like. Okay. I want to thank everybody at home for watching or listening to the podcast this week. We'll be back next Monday with another fantastic episode. Oriana Leo, where can the people find you?
The people can find me on Instagram at Oriana Leo or Twitter at Miss Oriana Leo. I'm also on Facebook, and I am working on a new show I will be launching called Running Errands in Hollywood.
Oh, great.
I am interviewing interesting people in my car, running an errand for them, and it's going to be a podcast and a webcast launching in about 2 weeks.
Oh, fantastic.
So stay tuned to my Twitter, you'll hear all about it.
I'm so stoked for that. That's
going to
be rad. Manas, where can the people find you?
On Twitter, at RestFiction, that's restaurantfiction.com, where I'll be doing a legitimate review on Sugar's Bar from Banshee pretty soon.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's my next
You do real reviews of fake bars and restaurants.
Yes,
okay.
And scholarly, yes.
Awesome.
Okay, sweet. I'm so excited about that. Well, folks, if you really want to find me, and I imagine that you do, you can find me on Twitter, at Matt Lieberman. That's MattLieberman. And if you're feeling nasty, you can follow me on the Instagram, Matty Lieberman, Matt with a Y, Lieberman. What else is going on? I'm on AfterBuzz all the time, Almost Human, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Justified, Cougar Town, Lost Girl, Helix on Sci-Fi, great shows, got more coming up in the spring. If you're in L.A. and you love live comedy, well, here's some great news for you. You can come see me at the I.O. West Comedy Theater on Hollywood Boulevard, 6366 Hollywood Boulevard, March 9th as a member of DJ Fawcett at 9 p.m. It's a great night of sketch comedy. I want to thank everybody for watching or listening. Have a great night. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Banshees rule!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.